Welcome, my friends, to the Track One Side One podcast. I'm your host who stays within the lines, Gaz Jones. And this week's episode was all about getting punk and disorderly. As my guest picking the tracks and bringing the stories is a two-time UK illustration champion and all-round graph legend, Si Mitchell. Si's worked with, amongst others, McFly, Green Day, Nova Twins, as well as BBC, E4, and many, many more. Basically, the list is fucking endless. He's picked some great tunes that have some amazing tales behind them as well. So let's crack on with this, yeah? Please enjoy my chat with Si Mitchell, and as ever, I'll be back on the other side.
Top five side ones. Track one.
You're listening to the Track One Side One podcast with me, your host, Gaz Jones. Each week, a guest picks their five favourite album opening tracks, and we dissect, discuss, and debate each one. So let's put on our classics and have a little chat then, shall we? And we're live. Joining me this week on the show, staring at me through my little old laptop screen there, surrounded by UV lights. how you doing, Si Mitchell? Good to see you, mate.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, thanks ever so much for agreeing to come on the show. It's been a long time coming. We finally managed to sort it out.
Yeah, man. As I'm going to blind you with these UV lights, so I apologise for that.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Before we get started on the list, man, I mean, how hard was it getting it down to just, you know, the five that we're going to talk about?
It was the hardest thing in the world. On my Instagram stories, I asked for people's suggestions. Then I kept thinking back and forth. I had a little tiny notepad in my phone and I kept like going through loads and loads of different albums. There was five that I was hard on. Then there was three that I was definitely keeping. Then there was like about seven or eight that kept coming in back and forth. So yeah, and as soon as I cut some of the songs and some of the albums, I kind of regretted it, but I've stuck with my five and I'm happy with them. However, I did put them up the other day on my Instagram and I had so many smart people, shall I call them, who came back at me asking, hey, where's Rancid? Where's Operation Ivy? And they were some of the albums that I cut out, mainly because the first track on the Operation Ivy album, Knowledge, Off Energy, isn't the best song. If only they started with Sound System, it would have been amazing. It would have been instantly on the list. Mm. However, Rancid and Out Come the Wolves. Maxwell Murder, the first song. Mm-hmm. That was one that was on the list right until I published the actual five that I'm going for now. So it was so close.
Let's get started with it. Track number one, where are we going, mate?
Okay, we're going with Linoleum by NoFX from Punk in Droblick.
Absolutely incredible. The floor is yours, mate. Let's do this.
Okay. First time I heard it, I was blown away and I had to keep rewinding the tape that I had of it. Because it was just so amazing. I'd heard fast drums, but I hadn't really heard drums sort of that fast. And I was just like, wow. It starts out with like, I think it's El Jefe going, and it just kicks in real fast. And the song is just not structured like any other song that I've ever heard. I don't think it has a chorus. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have a chorus. He actually says it on a new version of the song. He says, yeah, it's got two verses and a bridge. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is. The new version. Isn't it called, like, Linoleum or something like that?
It's called Linoleum. And I think basically they've played, like, about 2,000 shows with the song and probably more than 4,000 bands have covered it and put it onto the internet. I mean, my bands used to cover the song. I think basically what that song Linoleum is saying is basically they have put this version out to to stud, so anyone can like play it, anyone can use it. So
it's in the public domain now.
I think that's what they're saying. I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, don't quote me on it, but it's kind of what Linoleum is saying. So, but yeah, when I heard this in like 94, obviously 94 was a big year for music for me, because we had like Green Day's Dookie, which just blew so many things out of the water. And like, this album came out at the same time, and I adored Dookie like so much. I like wore that tape out. But this, I got this recorded off one of my friends, and I played this tape until it wore out as well. And I couldn't find the CD anywhere. It was really hard back in the day to get CDs of bands like this, especially because, well, actually, I think this was on Epitaph Records. Later on, Fat Records came out, which was Fat Mike from NerfX as well. So yeah, it just blew me away. And I think like it's one of the best examples of Ryan Green, the producer, who basically produced the entire like skate punk sound. Like every album I adore, it's Ryan Green.
He has a proper signature sound he has to his production style.
Yeah, I was talking about this the other day with one of my friends, Andy B, and he was listening to one of my old bands, and he loved the sound of the drums. And I don't know how I got it, but I put a 2P on my bass drum and a 2P on my snare, and Andy said that was one of Ryan's ways of making the snare and the bass sound that was synonymous with that record. So, yeah, I guess I heard something along the way.
You touched briefly on that kind of 94 like punk explosion. It was fucking incredible, right? I mean, I was 16 in 94. I mean, how old were you?
13.
13, right? I was
13.
It was incredible. You know, you had Dookie, Let's Go, Rancid, Blind Smash, Offspring, Punk and Drublic. It filled that massive hole that was left after Kurt Cobain died for me, you know.
Yeah, same for me. Like, Nirvana was such a huge thing, and obviously when Kurt died, this was the next thing that kind of filled that gap. I mean, I remember coming home on the bus and hearing the news about Kurt Cobain. Sadly, I don't know, getting murdered. is that okay?
Yeah.
But yes, at that point, after Kurt's death, this was the next thing that hit. And I'd already heard Green Day. I had 1039 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours on tape. And I used to go to, I think it was Andy's Records or R Price Records or something in King's Lynn. And they had a catalogue that you could look through. And you could order tapes and vinyl and, at the time, CDs, which were this new technology. And if you had enough money and import like fees, you could order certain things, and they would import them for you. And Kaplunk was one that I like got in on tape. And then when I kept going back and looking just to see each week if Green Day had released something new, and they had. There was one, it was a Longview, I think, on vinyl, and I ordered it, and yeah, basically got that, and it had stickers and everything. It was amazing, and it blew me away. But NerfX, when I heard that, Green Day were amazing, but NerfX were just faster and harder and better, and yeah, I don't know, I've always got a huge place in my heart for Green Day. Absolutely adore them, and still think Insomniac is one of the best punk albums ever.
Thank you. Yes, totally on the same page, mate. Totally on the same page.
Yeah, no, Insomniac's so good. But yeah, for me, like Punk and Drublic, when I heard that and Ribbed, for me, NerfX and Green Day are some of my favorite like bands and albums ever, just because of nostalgia but also because they were amazing at the time and still are. So
the thing was, especially kind of back then, you never really knew what you were going to get from a NoFX live show. If they managed to get hold of some decent drugs and they could be arsed, no one could touch them as like one of the greatest live bands you will ever fucking see. But if they're having a shit time and cannot be arsed, and you end up hearing maybe like four songs, it's it can be a bit of a car crash. But fortunately, I've seen NoFX be better, like be incredible, more than I have seen them be like average. Luckily.
Yeah. I've seen NoFX so many times. I think around about the 95 sort of time, they played with Goob Patrol in Norwich at the waterfront, and that blew me away. I think it was 95. I'm not sure, but that was amazing.
How kind of intrinsically important is like music and kind of punk rock music really kind of in regards to your arts? You know, do the two kind of go hand in hand for you?
I mean, actually, one of the bands that I'm going to be speaking about, I've drawn, I think now, well, every release for the band I've drawn and hundreds of t-shirts for them. For me, when I was young, when I was like 16, I started playing drums and I got into my first punk band. Music was the most important thing to me. Like, I drew all of my band's album covers, so I always knew that I liked drawing. But yeah, once I heard the speed of the drums on the Linoleum like song and everything subsequently that Smelly would do on any like NoFX album, I didn't understand how quick he drummed and how easy that was. Like, I didn't get it at the time. I just thought it was impossible. But as I started playing drums, I started learning quicker beats. And then I started playing basically every song at that sort of standard Eric Sandin sort of speed. So, yeah. And even when my band played live, we had 30-second songs that would last 15 seconds.
Always. Adrenaline gets a better of you, man.
I'd play them double speed. Some of the best recordings I've heard of me playing are me live, just because I'm so fast. And, I like speed in music. Like, you know, drum and bass is some of my favourite sort of music as well. So it's got to be fast, I think.
Track number two, Si, where are we going?
Okay, so the last song this guy ever played was Linoleum, and his name is Tony Sly, and he's from the band No Use for a Name, and the song is from Making Friends, and the first song is The Answer Is Still No.
When you sent your list over to me, obviously, you know, I had a little listen through and stuff. I hadn't heard this album since God's, I don't know, the late 90s. I had a fucking amazing time reacquainting myself with it again. It's so fucking good. It's so good.
Oh, like No Use for a Name are another one of my favorite bands ever. Like all these bands I actually am listing here, I listen to them probably daily still. And like I have playlists on my phone, in my Spotify that essentially have all of these songs in and more, and I listen to these. I love them. And again, this was one of the songs that my band would cover. And again, it blew me away how quick it was. But this was like 97, so it was a tiny bit later. And I think the whole Green Day thing had got a bit, not stale, but I was searching for something more than just Green Day, just more than NoFX. And No Use for a Name. They had catchy songs. They were fast as anything. This song, for example, starts off with, "Hey, what's your name? Fuck you, that's my name."
Do you know what film that's from? Little pop quiz.
I do. I actually wrote this down. Nice. I've got some notes.
it's such a good film. I adore the film that was from. I had totally forgotten that sample was at the start of this album as well.
Well, I watch like things like the Critical Drinker on YouTube or Channel Awesome or like many sort of movie review things, and Red Letter Media, who are one of the best on YouTube. They literally played that scene, and for me, I was just like, oh wow, I've never thought about it being from anything. I just thought it was something, like, because on one of the tracks they have, it's funny being inside, isn't it? Because when you are inside, you're still actually outside, aren't you? And then I guess when you're inside, you're outside because you're always inside your head. Yeah. I don't know if that's from anything. Like, I've never actually looked that up either. But yes, this quote was from Glengarry Glen Ross.
I believe. Yeah, incredible. That whole scene, that whole like 10-minute scene with Alec Baldwin, when he's just ripping everyone to shreds, is so good.
Well, yeah, I've seen that scene though. Again, though, when he says them lines, you know, hey, what's your name? Fuck you, that's my name.
That's my name.
Well, I still expect it to kick in, like, you know, I still hear the drums, I still get the goosebumps, and then I'm kind of let down straight away because I haven't, you know, got my fill of No Use For Me. But the first time I heard that album, I couldn't believe how quick it was. The whole album is a very quick, beautiful album, and it was one of them bands that I listened to the lyrics a tiny bit more, and Tony Sly wrote amazing lyrics, and I've appreciated them more since sadly he died, which was in like 2012. Real sad, because I had met him a few times and he was literally one of the most genuine, lovely people. Found enough time to like chat to me and speak to me, and we spoke because we were thinking about some artwork and stuff. And then, sadly, he died. So it's very sad when I found that out. And plus, the album he released was called Sad Bear. And it's always one that gets me emotional listening to that. But if I want to go back to me being, you know, 16, 17, I'll listen to Making Friends by No Use For A Name, and I'll be in a happy place, because it was so, it defined a few months of my life, that album did. I listened to it constantly.
This was the final No Use For A Name album that had Chris Shiflett on, wasn't it, I think? Before he jumped ship
Yeah, Chris Shiflett obviously went on to do Foo Fighters, Me First in the Gimme Gimme's. Don't forget. About him being in there, but Chris Shiflett, they had like behind the CD, there was like an email into their old website asking who this Chris Shiflett guy was. I remember that, and I don't know if he was on, was it More Betterness that came after this?
I don't think he was.
No,
I could be wrong.
Around
this sort of time anyway, you know.
Shiflett, I mean, he's an amazing guitarist, and
personally,
if I was kind of offered like, nothing against No Use For A Name, but if I've offered the Foo Fighters, I think I'd probably go Foo Fighters.
Of course, right? Like, but then again, I suppose you've got to look at it like, you know, Foo Fighters in like 97, 98, around that sort of time when he joined, they weren't the arena fucking band that they are now. You know, they were just, I think they just released like Everlong and all that kind of stuff. And they were still kind of, you know, second or third or fourth down the bill at festivals and stuff. You know, they weren't quite the, you know, Wembley Stadium filling band that they are now.
But also there was some stuff that happened with No Use For A Name that kind of like, MTV really wanted NoFX on MTV, and Fat Mike didn't want NoFX on MTV. Basically, like, No Use For A Name had singles that were going to be played on MTV, and MTV threatened them and said, we won't play No Use For A Name, which is, they were on Fat Records, unless we have NoFX as well. And Fat Mike didn't allow NoFX to go on, so No Use For A Name could have been so much bigger than they were. I think they had the scraps to do it. I think they should have been a much, much bigger band. I think they should have been on the sort of size of Green Day, you know, because they just rocked. They were so good. And their albums are, personally, I don't think there's like any bad songs in any of their albums. I'll listen to them all. Unlike Green Day, who I think never released an album after Insomniac. I think they just kind of disappeared after Insomniac. I've never heard anything else about them. let's get back to No Use for a Name. I think No Use for a Name had better caliber of albums. And if you listen to any of their albums, probably the first couple, leave them till you've kind of got used to how he writes. But definitely from Making Friends onwards, they could have been number one albums in the charts.
Is punk pop a dirty word?
No, because there's bands like Newfound Glory who are punk pop, and like they're also some of the best sort of when they are secret hardcore band. they play quite hardcore music. They even cover a hell of a lot of like Gorilla Biscuits and different people like that. So no, pop punk is not a bad word. Obviously, you know, we'd all love to be punk punks, but I think like spitting doesn't happen nowadays. So can you really truly be a punk anymore?
I don't know if it's an age thing, but it seemed to have got kind of it started getting so kind of sanitized around, I don't know, 2003, 2004.
With bands like Blink-182 and Good Charlotte?
For better or for worse. But then again, you know, that was for kind of like the following generation. Do you know what I mean? You know, when I was 16, I had, you know, Offspring and Rancid and Green Day and stuff like that. For the 16-year-olds in 2003, 2004, you know, they had Good Charlotte, and I actually, you know, I'm like, unlucky, mate. Everyone who gets obsessed with music, everyone has a gateway band. You know, no one's first band they got into was Napalm Death. Do you know what I mean?
My first single that I ever bought was Kiss, God's Gave Rock and Roll to You.
There you go. Like, you see what a fucking banging tune that is as well.
Yeah, man, that is. It was mainly because of Bill and Ted. That was the sort of music. The first song I ever remember was House of Fun by Madness. I'm sure I had bad albums when I was a kid, like Meatloaf and stuff I remember listening to. But still, that's not terrible. But I never got into the pop stuff. But yeah, listening to some of the bands nowadays, I don't dig. I don't dig their sort of sound. However, I was a Fat Record sort of person. And this actually is a very good segue into the next song. Nice. For me,
track number three, then. Fat Records,
for me, Fat Records was always the place I could find a band that I adored. And basically every single band on Fat Records was amazing and truly is. For example, what I'm going to talk about is the sampler CDs that they used to give out free at gigs, or you could buy them for like, I think, about £2. In certain independent record stores, like I did in Norwich. I used to buy them. But yeah, one of these things is my next song. So I got a sampler in sort of about 97 when they finally got over here, and it was called Fat Music for Fat People. Mm-hmm. And the first song on it was also the first song from the band's album, How to Clean Everything, and that band is Propagandhi, and song is Anti-Manifesto. And oh my god, when I first heard that song, with its, like, for a drummer, hearing how Jord plays them drums, it just blew me away. Like, because it's so all over the place with its timings, and it's fast, it's hard, it's quick, it's political, and yeah, it blew me away. Like, what do you think of Propagandhi? Like,
for me, it was, I think it was the third greatest gig I've ever been to in my life. It was the first time I saw Propagandhi.
Yeah,
it was
which,
you know, I'm ashamed to say, it was only about 9 years ago. it was they played at the ballroom in Camden.
Yeah,
It was on, I'm trying to remember which tour it was. I think it was Fail States, I think. It was the album. What was the album? What was the album after Supporting Cast? It was the album after that.
Yeah, Fail States.
Yeah, Fail States. Yeah, and I remember going, being so excited. I think, I'm going to finally fucking get to see Propaganda. It's going to be unbelievable. I was like, my favourite Propaganda song is Dear Coach's Corner, and they fucking opened with it. I lost my shit. I've never seen a band playing that kind of technical music being so fucking locked in. I've never seen a band that tight. The drumming, it was ridiculous. And the guitar playing, oh my God. I love the fact he plays like a Cherry Red SG. You know, I'm a big AC/DC fan, so it's like, it's quality. I'd love to say I was in sort of Propaganda back in the day. I had fat music for fat people, but the track I always went to back to on that album time and time again was Skin Deep, Guns and Wankers. Propaganda, just, I'm more of a fan of the kind of later stuff, like Supporting Cast is my favourite. But it was actually kind of nice sort of going back and like discovering the early stuff, which had completely kind of passed me by. Just that whole kind of how important, that amazing melding of, the political and everything they stand for. You know, Propaganda's lyrics are unbelievable. They're funny as fuck as well. Just, biting lyrics. This ain't the fucking Ramones. Do you know what I mean?
No. This band actually put out some stuff that got me thinking about politics. First time, as I said, I heard them was like 97-ish. And when I heard How to Clean Everything, and then I found out they had a second album, which was Let's Talk More Rock, I had them both on tape, and one side was How to Clean Everything, and the other side was Let's Talk More Rock. And I think on one of these sides, I think it was How to Clean Everything, I had some Rage Against the Machine at the end, and I'd fast forward them so I could get to the other album and listen to it. But when I first heard Annie Manifesto, I was just like, I'd been wanting something that was a bit more like, I'd heard Rage Against the Machine, I'd heard the politics from them dudes, and it felt like something, like politics was something that I'd never really, been into or anything. And my band was playing gigs at that point, and I was meeting more and more people coming out of Norfolk. And the lyrics and everything that Propaganda were talking about hit me, and I was just like, oh, amazing. Not that I understood everything they were talking about, still don't. Like, them guys are very, very, very intelligent, and I'm pretty sure, probably Todd will probably listen to this, because we like chat about artwork and stuff a lot, sees my stories, so he might check this out. Yeah, them guys are just so amazing. For me, How to Clean Everything was how I got into them, and it's probably still my favorite album. Then Let's Talk More Rock was so, so bloody amazing. Then Today's Empire's Tomorrow's Ashes got harder, and they started becoming more aggressive, and that's when Todd joined them. And I adored Todd when I first met him. He was a really nice guy. And I'd say I was in like Kerrang magazine. There was a little tiny photo of me when they played a gig, like in the front row. And I was like, yes, finally. Like, this was a gig. Yeah. And they would end, I think, back in that day with Annie Manifesto, maybe Scar Sucks. Annie Manifesto was just an amazing song that blew me away. And thanks to them, like Fat Record samplers that were so cheap. And like, for the first two Fat Record samplers, Fat Music, Fat People and Survival of the Fattest, every single song on there, I can't hear them on any other album because I just know which song comes after it next. Annie Manifesto is the only one that I'll probably kind of go either into the next song or the next song, depending on which album I'm listening to. So,
do you still like listening to an album from start to finish, mate? You know, is this something you like to do?
I've listened to all of your podcasts, so I was waiting for this question to come up. Nowadays with music coming out in little tiny chunks and like singles and never really being albums, it is strange, if that was the question you were going to ask me. But I still do listen to albums. I think it's really important to listen to them, like how the band have intended them to be. Because when I was in bands, we spent ages working out which track to go where and when. And I think a lot of the bands that I listen to are still in that sort of like mind frame. Where, yeah, you've got your Justin Biebers and that. I don't even know if they have albums now or if there is just a collection of singles to a point with some sort of like B-sides or some like songs that have done with other people. But for example, bands like Bad Cop, Bad Cop. I'll listen to track one all the way to the end of that album. And Warriors, which they just released like basically a year ago, is brilliant. It's a perfect album. And listening to it, like, I get excited when I listen to music. Like, when I'm listening to a song and it's getting close to the end, I get excited about the next track that's going to come on. I don't know if you do. I don't know if anyone else does.
Always. You know, especially if it's like an all-time classic album that I've loved, because I know what's coming next.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I do still get excited about, you know, certain albums. I get, you know, the same sort of fizzy teenage rush that I got when I first heard it when I was, you know, whatever, 14, 15, 16. I mean, do you still, you know, how do you listen to your music? Is it through Spotify, or do you still collect albums?
Nowadays, like in the car, I've got a USB that sits in the car, and that's got hundreds of thousands of tracks on, and that's just on random. but for some reason, I always hear the same sort of songs anyway. So I don't know why they do that. It's the same for the phone. So that's another one. But yeah, mostly Spotify. Strangely enough, I will get up and ask her, like a device. I'll say her name out loud and say, could you play Spotify? And that's how my morning will start. So, and it's whatever I've listened to when I've gone for a run or I've gone to the gym. It'll be the thing that I've been listening to. And yeah, I like listening to music like that, but I will listen to an album. And I get a lot of like vinyl sent to me. This is actually another good segue of the next song.
Nice. yes. You're the king of segues, mate. I love it.
Yeah, I'm killing it. basically, like that question, it is very important, I think, to listen to albums the way the musicians intended you to hear them. And I also think it's very important, like massively important, to look at the artwork for the album, because us artists work really hard.
Yes, you fucking do.
I'm kind of pleased that vinyl has come back, because I put so much work into like the inlays and secret little bits in albums that I've produced and drawn. For example, for Random Hand. basically, like, first song I ever heard by Random Hand was Play Some Scar. And it scared me, mainly because... it wasn't the first song I actually heard, but I can't remember the first songs that I heard by them. long story, but in 2006, I think they went on tour with Adequate Seven, and I think it was Adequate Seven's like final UK tour, and Random Hand were on there, and I worked at a bar called the Old Angel in Nottingham, which was the best metal bar in the world ever. And it was the best working fun that I'd ever had in a bar sitting, setting. So, and I had to do the poster for Adequate Seven to advertise it, because they didn't have a poster. So I did this like Frankenstein with a load of people jumping off its head. And the main support was Random Hand. And I obviously put their name on the tour poster. And yeah, I watched them that night and totally forgot everything about them. But I knew I'd watch something that was really cool, but I think I was quite drunk. So, and then basically in 2008, 2009, I got a phone call from my friend John Cosgrove from the band Mike TV, formerly Pickled Dick. and he phoned me up and was like, random hand are playing down the road and they need somewhere to stay. Could you let them stay at yours? And I was like, okay, cool. I think I've heard of them before. And I went on MySpace to listen to them. And I'd said yes at this point to them staying around. And I went onto MySpace and there was no photos of them or anything. And there was only blurry sort of like gig photos and they looked really big and scary. And then Play Some Scar came on, which was the first track of Change of Plan. And it scared me because it was quite hard and aggressive, sort of like metally sort of punky music with horns. And I was like, oh man, I think like, and I didn't know where Keith Lee was. I thought that was somewhere in America. So I actually contacted them and said, oh, actually, I don't think you can stay around because my girlfriend at the time had to go into work early. And I was kind of relieved at that point because I was like, oh, these big scary American guys were going to be staying around at my house. And then I was like, oh, actually, no. Let's just, you know, you only live once. Let's let them stay around. It'll be fun. So I contacted them again and said, yeah, come and stay. And yeah, they came and stayed. And that's when I started like talking about artwork with them. And they weren't scary, big American guys. They were the cutest, lovely bunch of guys from up Yorkshire that you could ever imagine. And I fell in love with their music. And luckily, they really liked my artwork. And we started working together like about, 2009. And I think it's been, 12 years now that they've been some of my best friends. And yeah, I've done everything since then for them, artwork style. So yeah, it's been amazing. So yes, the albums are very important. If you look in the Random Hand albums, you can see loads of secret hidden messages in their inlays. There's my date of birth in one of their inlays, and different like there's lots of little secrets, so you have to look, and then you kind of realize that something kind of looks out of place. So
when was the first time you saw like a piece of your artwork that you'd done for an album cover? When was the first time you saw one actually on like, you know, a big old record sleeve? What did it feel like?
Well, I think basically when Pickled Dick were Pickled Dick, John Cosgrove, I'd done a tiny bit of artwork for a band called Mibe, and John Cosgrove took the piss out of it and said something really harsh about it. But he was quite edgy at the time, and he said things to antagonize people. But he got worried that I'd be upset with him, and he made an account on DeviantArt to message me privately just to say, hey, I was only joking about that. Would you like to do some artwork for Pickled Dick? So, yeah, I started doing artwork for them guys when they were Pickled Dick. And I think the first sort of artwork that I'd seen was when I did stuff for them. I think so. I can't really remember. However, actually, yeah, that's silly. My band, when we released our first album in 1997, it was called And Pigs Fly. And I did the artwork of some pigs flying through a city. So yes, that was the first time. But I kind of cringe when I look at that artwork because it's really, really, really poo. So
yeah, hey man, everyone's got to start something. You know, Jimi Hendrix was shit when he first started playing guitar. That's the way you got to look at it.
True. I still love that album, and I still think it's fun. It's just it's really bad. The artwork's okay, but I was very young. As I said, I was like 16. Yeah. So yeah, that was the first time. Second time was probably next time we release stuff, and then so on and so on. But the first people that kind of were professional that I did artwork for, Yeah, it would have been Pickle Dick, or as they changed their name to My TV.
Yeah.
And there was Rat Attack as well, about the same time. And oh man, I did so much artwork for so many people back then, and I used to do it so cheap. Yeah, I'm very proud of all of the stuff that I've done, like very proud. And I've always been lucky enough where I've only worked with bands that I actually like. So I've never had to do anything that I didn't, which is lovely, because now my name's attached to like McFly, Nerve Twins, Random Hands, Green Day.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's some other people in the pipework that I'm working with at the moment.
Nice.
So yeah, I've been very pleased. So yeah, segueing is awesome on this episode, because yes, the DIY punk scene, obviously Random Hands, like famous there, Mouthwash, and this band, well, this band, thanks to another independent, Sonic Boom 6 and Bomber Music, I first saw and heard the Skints, and the Skints are amazing, like literally one of the best bands I think out there now, possibly that has been there. So diverse in their sound, so good in their lyrics, so all their albums are very, very, very strong. And yeah, one of these bands that, you know, when you're at a gig and you want to go to the bar to get a drink, and there's no one at the bar, but the band is so good that you don't get your drink, but you watch the band.
Yeah.
Like that was the Skints for me. Normally I will stand in a crowd of people waiting to get served if a band's on and they're okay. But the Skints, I just finished my drink when they started, and I really wanted another drink, but I just couldn't take my eyes off them. They were so, so good. And I think they were on the Rebel Alliance tour. I think Mouthwash might have been Sonic Boom 6, might have been Random Hand. But yeah, when they first played, well, this song, what is it called? What was it called?
Yeah, Mindless.
Yeah, so yeah, the first time I just couldn't take my eyes off them, and they played this song Mindless, which is off Live, Build, Breathe, Believe. No, Live, Breathe, Build, Believe.
Believe, yeah.
Which, yeah, they were so good. They were hypnotizing. They were so, so bloody good. And then hearing the album and realizing that I actually had an album of theirs, well, an EP. Like, it was a small EP of theirs, and it had some of these songs, I think, that were on this album, and I knew them already. But I'd never put the two together, especially when I saw them live. So, yeah, I think I got given it by Sonic Boom 6 back in the day. Nice. But yeah, the Skints, so, so amazing. Like, four amazing musicians. Like, yeah, some of the best songs I've ever heard. But, yeah, what do you think of them?
The thing that always gets me with the Skints, man, is the drums. Is it Jamie?
Yeah, Jamie.
It's fucking incredible. And he sings as well, bastard.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite songs is the secret track on the album, and it's just Jamie with an acoustic guitar. Yeah,
but they've got almost like, I don't know, I can hear like a lot of like soul influences in their songs as well.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
There's ska, reggae, punk,
dub, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful mix, like, and they do it so seamlessly, like,
yeah, completely.
From the first time I ever saw them, I'm very proud how big they've got and how many people have actually seen them now. It's a very big, proud thing, especially when, I saw them in Peterborough with probably about 20 people. So now seeing them playing like a huge stage at a festival to thousands of people. It's amazing. Like, they played NAS Festival when I was there, and they smashed it. And the crowd really dug it, and they all sung along. To think back to the days back then, it's bloody awesome. Like, I yeah, it couldn't have happened to a nicer set of guys as well. Like, Josh is lovely, Jonathan's lovely, Marcia's lovely, Jamie's lovely. Always had a lot of time every time I was chatting to them. Rad set of peeps. Rad album as well. Like, that, I think, is my favourite album. I don't know if it's the nostalgia again, because it was the first one I properly heard, but all the songs on that album are perfect. Like, there's nothing I would skip. Not that I'd skip anything of theirs on any of their albums, because they're all really good. And their albums are all very different. They had one of my friends, Rufus Hound, on one of their albums. I think I'd been bugging Rufus, saying, check these out, check these out. And I think he fell in love with them as well. He does a little tiny radio cameo in between a song. Yeah, that's such an amazing band. And that, like, Mindless, it starts off with Marcia on the piano and it kicks in. It goes hard and then it goes reggae ska. It's so good. It's an amazing, amazing song. And so grown up for how young they were in their career. Listening to them, seeing them grow as a band and experiment and get bigger, get more sponsorships, get, like, bigger stages and have people singing along. I mean, the crowd at NAS are not your standard sort of ska fan, you know. They like all that weird sort of young people's music. And for a band, NAS Festival, like the Skins to come, I mean, it was amazing, because I've been asking them guys for years, like NAS Festival, to put on some ska and punk. Like, I've been saying to them for so long, like, you know, just put some ska and punk on, just have a stage. Finally, to have a ska punk band, like, apart from Gentlemen's Dub Club, who are also amazing, like, there was nothing really for me at that festival music wise. So, yeah, seeing them guys there was amazing. And seeing them at Leeds or Reading or any of the sort of, like, festivals around that I've been to and they've played, the crowds always, like, dig them. So, yeah, very, very pleased for them. And it couldn't have gone to a better band. So,
no. I think that's a good way to finish, mate. So thank you so much, my friends.
No problems. Thank you so much. It's been fun.
There you go. And Si is one of the good guys. And he was an early fan of the podcast. So it was a real honour and a treat to have him on and have a good old musical chinwag. Good times, man. Cheers, Si. And if you don't already, go and give him a follow on the gram at Si_Mitchell. But hey, I'm sure you already do that, right? Because he's fucking incredible. And I hope you all enjoyed listening to it as well. Please give us a review on the old iTunes or the old Spotify if you're feeling saucy. Give us a follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just search for Track One Cyber on Podcast. Come say hi. Tell your friends, your lovers, and your enemies about us, and it all makes a huge difference. So take care of each other, okay? Fight the power. And don't forget, fuck the Tories. See you back here in a bit. Laters.
Top 5 side ones. Track one.
You've been listening to the Track One Side One podcast with me, your host, Gaz Jones. The greatest. Give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter by searching for Track One Side One podcast to keep fully up to date with all future guests. And there will also be Spotify playlists linked to each episode. So please check all that out. And I'll see you soon.